May the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Seated. I saw them eating, and I knew who they were. That's an old Middle Eastern proverb that sums up something that Jesus and anyone from his time probably knew. I saw them eating, and I knew who they were. Of course, in our time of McDonald's and Burger King, of family suppers around the television, it may not make much sense at all. But in Jesus' day, what you ate and with whom you ate it was of the utmost importance. Instead of what you eat is who you are, this proverb says that whom you eat with is who you are. I saw them eating. I knew who they were. This kind of thinking was especially true among religious people of Jesus' time, for whom eating together was literally a religious experience. When they sat down to eat together, they were literally celebrating their faith, a faith that had very specific rules about what happened around the table. Cleanliness, major importance. Clean food, clean dishes, clean hands, clean heart. Table manners were and became for Jesus quite literally a matter of life and of death. You see, Jesus managed to offend an awful lot of people with his table manners. He ignored the finger bowl by his plate. He ate whatever was put in front of him. He thought nothing of sitting down to eat with filthy, sinful people. Jesus saw, or people saw Jesus eating, and they knew who he was. Someone who had lost all sense of right and wrong, someone who ate with sinners, and thereby accepted, if not indulged in, their sin. Think of it this way. If I were to put together a sinner's table at the local Denny's or First Watch, the sort of table that Jesus would be at today, it would probably include people like a child molester, an illegal arms dealer, a garbage collector, a heroin addict, a human trafficker. And don't forget to put Jesus at the head of that table, asking the child molester to hand him a roll, please, and offering an arms dealer a second cup of coffee before he went back to selling the guns. Now, if that offends you even a little bit, then we're almost ready for what happens next, because next, the local ministerial association comes into the restaurant, and it sits down at the large table across the room from the sinners. These religious folk all have good teeth, no dirt under their fingernails. When their food comes, they hold hands and pray, silently, of course, so as not to make anyone uncomfortable. They're perfectly nice people, but they can hardly eat their chicken salads for staring at the strange crowd in the far booth. The garbage collector smells like spoiled meat. The addict can't seem to find his mouth with his spoon. Their children are running all over the place, throwing food at one another, and none of those is the real heartbreaker. The real heartbreaker is Jesus sitting there as if everything's just fine at the head of the table. He doesn't know what kind of message he's sending. Who's going to believe that he speaks for God if he keeps hanging around with people like this? I saw them eating, and I knew who they were. Now, while all this seems to be a bit of a different story from the one about the man with the two sons that we heard in the gospel, let me assure you, it is not different at all. That story begins with a complaint about Jesus' table manners. This parable, commonly called the parable of the prodigal son, opens with the religious authorities challenging and grumbling against Jesus. This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them. And then everything that follows, the telling of the story of the man with the two sons, is a response to that complaint. Jesus weaves this parable about a man who can't for the life of him get his own family to sit down at table together. The younger son, so warped with his sense of unworthiness. The older son, so inflated by his sense of entitlement. Both sons are suffering under the illusion that they can somehow be in relationship with their father without being in relationship with each other. It's a disturbing story about hanging out with the wrong people. It's all about throwing parties for losers and asking winners to foot the bill. It's about giving up on the idea that we can love God and despise one another. Like it or not, we can't do that. Because the only way to work out our relationship with God is to work out our relationship with one another. During our vestry retreat and recently at an AIR meeting, we talked about the centrality of hospitality in the Christian faith. We spoke of and hinted at our work that we need to do with each other, and how important it is to pay attention to everyone inside of Emmanuel and everyone outside of the Emmanuel household. This morning's gospel and those conversations reminded me of a story told by the Reverend Fred Craddock. Craddock had served as a pastor in a small congregation in the mountains of Tennessee. It was near Oak Ridge. And the area was experiencing a population boom at that time because of the work of the Atomic Energy Commission. So all these folk were moving into the area, and Fred called together his church board to try and come up with a way of inviting these newcomers to join the church. But the chair of the board said, "No way, they're not our kind. They're transients. They're construction junkies. They live in tents, worse yet, trailers. They don't have roots. They won't fit in." Well, the following Sunday, they had a meeting after church to resolve the matter. The board chair spoke, Fred spoke, lots of people spoke. And finally, someone made a motion that anyone seeking membership in this church must own property in the community. And believe it or not, it was received with a strong second, and it passed unanimously. The only person prepared to vote was a person who had no vote, except in case of a tie, Fred. So he couldn't vote. Later, Fred and his wife returned to the area, and they went looking for their old church. Much to their surprise, they came upon it, and the parking lot was absolutely filled with cars and trucks and vans, even some motorcycles. Excited to see what was going on, Fred and his wife went in. The place was full, but the pews were gone. There were in their places Formica tables and chrome chairs. The pump organ was still in the corner, but nobody was sitting at the console because the building was no longer a church. It was now a restaurant. Fred described what he saw this way. "It was filled with the most god-awful people you've ever seen." And he turned to his wife and said, "It's a good thing this place is no longer a church, because none of these people would fit in." How ironic that the same people who were once denied the bread of life, Fred concluded, are now invited to pig out on all you can eat. I think that Jesus would appreciate Craddock's tale. I think he'd like it as much as the story he tells this morning about the father and his two sons. Picture him today with us. in this little restaurant. He tells us that we should come on over to his formica table and pull up some chairs. He invites us to join the party because, you see, he likes eating and he knows who we are. Good and clean, self-assured, or maybe not. And you know, the good news is that Jesus wants to eat with us. Because everyone is invited to sit at his table. Everyone. Everyone. Even the righteous. And so he says to us, come on. Come on and eat and meet my friends, feast with us, and dessert's on me. And as far as I know, he's still waiting to see how the story ends. Amen. Amen.